Warning. This episode may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion advised.
That's the mistake that these young kids make. They go in now thinking, oh, it's exciting. They've come off the street and there are loads of friends in there. Loads of kids have been dealing or robbing or what they're doing now. So they're going into a community now that's already waiting for them to warmly receive them until things go wrong. That's where it's different. When I went into prison, there's more camaraderie about, a lot more old school prisoners that had a way about them that these young kids don't have. And there's a different set of morals in my time, taking people's trains off them and burning their feet in cells and such to get their family to send money to them.
Today, Julie and I talk to a man convicted of a contract killing and labelled a violent thug. But is that the real Kevin Lane? More than anything, the man we spoke to reminded me of my son. Extremely hardworking, charming, and completely unable to sit still. He spent the whole of this interview walking around his desk. It was fascinating. Listen on to hear his story. Good morning, Kevin. We're delighted that you've joined us here on a quite chill day.
Yeah, good morning, Amy. Good morning, Julie. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Kevin. You've had lots of unexpected turns along the way. Perhaps you could take us back to the beginning and family as a young child or wherever you think is the best place to start.
So I grew up in a village called Harefield in Middlesex. It was a quite rural village. North, south, east, and west, you had to go up massive hills to get to the village. Lots of pubs, proper village where you have the village fates and carnivals and stuff like that. Great place to grow up in. Countryside, motorbikes, swings, canals, boats, you name it. It's just fantastic. You're just out in the wilderness as a kid, loving it. With a little stick into spear or fishing rod or a net, getting tadpoles. Beautiful. So I come from a family of, there's seven of us. I've got three brothers. Well, actually, I've got three brothers. I don't see one from my father's previous marriage as a baby. But so I've got two brothers and four sisters and me. So that's seven.
Big family. Second
eldest. Mother separated with my father when he was young. And that has its difficulties for a family of four at the time.
When you say young, how old were you?
Four.
Oh, you were, that was young.
Yeah. 4 or 5 years, I was young, yeah. My mum had just had my sister, Joanne. Unfortunately, my father and my mother split up for whatever reasons, but it's very sad. But so then I went on from there at that age of no father. My mother remarried some years later, considerable amount of years later. But then by that time, I was a young teenager I wasn't a teenager, I was a young boy, but somewhat older than 4 or 5. With that, I went to work from there. Didn't get on with my father or stepfather, not his fault, it was totally mine. He came into a relationship where he was a lot older than maybe you would start a family with, especially with four kids. And with me, it was quite problematic, quite a live wire as a kid, full of energy. Fighting for my brother and fighting, for whatever reasons in a village, which was a fighting man's village, unfortunately, to say that.
Why do you call that a fighting man's village?
Well, you have two SPG vans parked in the village on a Friday and Saturday night waiting for the pubs to empty.
Wow.
And there was over 17 pubs that I could recall at the time and off the village and the lanes. And that's about the football club, the cricket club, the sports club, the squash club. We've got this pub, that pub, walk to that pub, walk to that pub, walk to that pub in your streets, and then just off. It was, in the summer, you can imagine kind of people coming from surrounding towns and villages. It's quite a scene. So there's a traveller community there as well, down the lanes. Great. And with them come a little bit of volatile behaviour, as well as the men in the village. Mm. They were just the same. So I grew up in that village, and I started work at a very early age, very seven, in the juniors. I was doing gardening rounds and washing people's cars. So by the time I went to the seniors, I used to be able, I had my own school uniform that I purchased myself, and I had a different uniform every day.
Wow.
And I couldn't watch every day. And it was the smartest of uniform I'd buy from not school uniform shop. I'd have turn ups at the bottom. I've had loafers on or all sorts of things, you know, cardigans at 12. And then by 15, I moved into a flat of a friend of mine who was 18. He got deported from America. His father used to whip him with an electric lead, and he went on the run for years, burgling and living rough. He ended up coming to England in the care home system, and then through that, got a flat. So all my adversities as a young child molded me, I believe, into the man I am today in some form, because I had the thirst. I like work. I enjoy work, so that's just in me. But to make something succeed and earn a good living straight, I just thrived on that. And then I was being employed by a builder when I was 14, and he got rid of the married man who was had a family, and I replaced him because I worked that much harder. And that sort of pattern continued through my adulthood until I got recalled in, taken into prison. But those parts of me stayed with me in prison. I worked hard in prison. I'd clean the kitchen so you could see your face in the sink. As I'm concerned, I'll do it right and I'll do it properly. But the reward I got from that was knowing I've done it properly and everybody else is going to appreciate it. A lot of them don't, but a lot of them did.
Yeah.
But personal satisfaction for me, no, I've done it right. So as a child, that formed me into, like I say, the man I am now at work. But then
Work is a big, big ethic of yours, and you say there are these kind of two sides of you. You've got the really strong work ethic. You were working for a builder, you were working for gardening and all sorts when you were very young. And then you said about it being legal, the work.
yeah, so I was a young kid working an honest pound.
Can I just interrupt as well? What made you get into work so early? Was it something that you just had within you, or were you needing to earn some, just wanted to be out of the way?
So my mother would let me stay off school here and there, where it was a little bit different going to school there. I'd have a day off here and there, and I'd help mum clean. So I'd do all the polishing and dusting and stuff and hoovering. And that's why I associate working with good times.
Right.
But then also full of energy. Just they'd have had me as attention deficit order, you know, and stuff, and tablets down me. If, you know, I see a psychologist at school, and they said, "There's nothing wrong with him. He's got loads of energy."
Yeah.
But now the guy's chuck a tablet down his neck. No, the kid just got loads of energy. My son at the moment, with my partner, he has got that. He was sitting there, and his legs were shaking. He'd be wobbling the table, and put him out in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know the same thing with my son. I can remember when he first went to school, he was exactly like that. And I remember he only went to school for 2 hours as a little 5-year-old or whatever it was. And he'd come home and he had one of these little pedal thingies and he'd go up and down the street for an hour because it had been so difficult to be contained in a room in school. So I understand that exactly.
You know, if you have children like that, then cater for their need. Don't punish them in school for just what their makeup is. That's my motto. And I don't feel tablets is the way forward when there's another form of natural behaviour that is far better for a child. Because I'm a testament to that. I may have been served a long time in prison, but make no doubt about it, I've got such good friends, widespread, like you'd never believe. And they say, "Kate, your friends on my hand." No, I'm very lucky. I can count lots of friends
Yeah.
on lots of hands. And I've been in prison, I've had them people through me 20 years in prison. So it's factual. And that has to be as a part of the person I am today. And so whatever I was as a child is still in me as an adult, regardless of my conviction. And I don't believe I'd have been the same man if I'd have been full of tablets either. Because what other tablets would I be on now if I'd have been on them as a kid in the scene in the juniors? And that's what I think a lot of adults have, a lot of parents have with their children now. Start them on retinol or whatever they're giving them, and then it just escalates to other areas where kids may start self-harming and all sorts of mental health issues. Where just give kids a bleed and ball, a field, a bat, let them play on the common, give them some outside activity, not sitting on a bloody computer. Click, 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 click. Not experiencing life, the fresh air. I used to be out as a kid running around in the rain.
Yeah.
And thinking nothing of it. Coming in, my mum are going nuts. You're soaking. Get in here, you little bleeder. You should be home at 9 o'clock. Lockdown block or catch me or knock down Ginger or something, you know?
Yeah.
So if we had a bit more of that of our kids, we'd have a lot more settled children. But then that's, I believe that's where I am. Because of the country, I'm working hard.
Yeah.
I think that's me.
And you worked hard. And you ended up in prison. Can you just, for the people listening that don't know your story, can you briefly say why you ended up in prison?
Yeah. With Ventures and Work, I'm pretty good at seeing things before they happen. And I knew that the camera security in this country was going to be massive in 1991. I bought a security company. I purchased that company's name. Changed the name, actually, afterwards, straight away. Went into the security, but I needed that to be a stepping stone.
Yeah.
But that took off in a manner where I ended up with loads of clubs and loads of pubs and loads of doormen. As a young man, looked like, you know, that was my size. They're like bloody massive bodybuilders or great big giants. And then so I was at 18, I was working security doors with these people because I could fight.
Yeah.
I wasn't drinking, I was boxing, so I wouldn't go out with my friends to the pubs and young kids getting a bit of bother here and there. Not all kids do, but I accept that. And I thought, well, I'd rather work on the door and get paid if I've got to hold my hands up than go out drinking when I don't drink and fight anyway. So I started doing the security there, bought the company as a stepping stone. That just took off. And then you start meeting, your bridges extend, don't they?
Mm.
And with that comes a little bit of crime. Ducking and diving. I used to buy quite a few lorries of stuff, which in the old days it'd be off the ship at the docks and things, and it was just the way it was. Oh yeah, the lads have got a bit of gear, sell a bit of bunts. Now, of course, it seemed in a completely different light. I accept that. No one ever got hurt with it, the goods that come to me. They come through the back door. And very, as a woman, you would appreciate the washing powder I used to get. Great big boxes of it, pallets of it, pallets and pallets of it. It'd go in days, bosh. So I used to enjoy doing that. I smile about it because I'd have a chat with you and I'd have like a box of British Home Stores, Paddington and Bear bottle openers that were £5 in British Home Stores. I'd go, oh, yeah, have one of those, Julie, as well. And, you know, I'd have a nice bottle of Elizabeth Arden perfume or Red Lady or Chanel, whatever. And I used to enjoy that hustle and bustle of bartering and just fucking things out, as well as bought my first house when I was 18. So the criminology side of things spread me out in that manner, where you're getting designer goods or whatever you're getting. Unfortunately, with that come the violence.
Mm.
So I was only talking yesterday, not yesterday, the day before, to a young kid who's got massive issues with confidence. He's a beautiful young boy. And I was talking to him about, there's an incident years ago where I was working security doors, and this pest, you might want to call him, of the community, was terrorising the people in a pub that was owned by my in-law's friend. And I used to do the security there because they used to have all Irish dudes out the back, but it was a mixed culture. You'd have Jamaicans, Irish. Back in 1986, all partying and drinking in the world. Quite a bubbly area. And this fella had gone in there to terrorise people, but in the same breath, he'd gone and nicked this girl's daughter and knocked her front teeth out. Right?
Right.
And I was told to me, and I said, he's done what? Where does he live? Give us his address. I went straight round, opened the door, went quack. There you go, lose your front teeth. All right? You fucking blah, blah, tooth swears, blah, 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 blah. And I was off. Thought no more of it. But now, of course, if I look upon that now, doing that today, the consequences of that for me and obviously what I've actually done then will be looked at in a completely different light because it isn't considered acceptable behaviour in society. But let's just look at this, ladies. The police are so overstretched now, and you've got communities now out there that are being terrorised by people, and people are getting away with stuff because the police just can't even get there to attend to people that are being assaulted. So you'd have someone in that area who's a bit of a decent fella, a bit of a John Wayne. I'm not John Wayne, although I look like
No.
You understand, didn't you? So someone would say, bloody hell, John, you know what he's just done? He's bullying that old person. He's going around the house, taking a bit of electric money off of him because he's on the drink. And that person would go, oh, listen, you tow rag, clear off. There's that side of the community that still exists, but not as much now. Smaller villages, you would get that. But I believe that type of community spirit and looking after each other has gone now because you'll get arrested for it.
Yeah.
Go to prison. And yet, the police still, it still carries on. But that was the type of person I was then. And it didn't set me, it has done me well in how people receive me and see me as a person. And I'm not going to, I say, regret it. I wish I'd have led my life a little bit different in times. But it's made, like I say, I'm not that bad a character.
No, just made a few wrong choices along the way, but you've come back.
Life shuffles the cards, and we have to play with the hand that we're dealt. And if you're young,
You can end up being caught up in something before you even realise.
you're a young kid. As far as you're concerned, you've got fireworks going off around your ears. It's like Walt Disney, 18. Next thing, nightclub, you're driving a. So the next thing you know, you're in a nightclub, you're driving a 911 Porsche Targa, the best cars around, you're buying houses here and there and flipping them, earning lots of money, and you're walking into clubs with all your friends that don't have to pay and going straight in. And you think that you don't realise then, but it does get a grip of you. Definitely gets a grip of you. And I wish now that I hadn't gone into the security. And maybe, because I was a very good worker. Like, I was fourth in the country for Irish Life within 2 weeks of working for them in the south of England. I hold a world record for a company in America still to this day that I smashed in my first week of working for them,
Wow.
etc., etc. So work to me is a big thing. And maybe my son, for instance, he is in the top three or four most of the time for Oracle in sales, number one sometimes in the world. My other son, he's of equal abilities in the building trade. He's in the minute touring America with his wife and his baby, my granddaughter, working.
Yeah.
Joined Orlando, he's now in San Francisco. He's been a year touring and just working with his family. And so they've got that from their father.
Hard work.
Real success, yeah.
Yeah, I used to make them work when they were kids. I used to say, right, you, come on, come and meet. Get your bloody bucket. There's a few quid. Start washing the car down. Or give them cans of drink when we was on holiday in Spain. Cold drink in a bucket and go around and sell them for £1, whatever it was at the time. I can't remember, 50p. It gave them the incentive to work.
So that real entrepreneur spirit in the children at that young age. Wow.
Well, you do get a lot from work if you.
So, how old were you when things turned around and you ended up going to prison?
I went away for a kidnapping. I worked for a company called Scott and Fetzer, and they had a friend of mine was the factory distributor of this company, and he was the deputy director or something. Anyway, they had some goods stolen, and these fellas that stole them were affiliated to a bit of a football gang. And they put forward this gentleman as the man that was involved in stealing £100,000 of equipment. But it wasn't him. He was a ruse. They sent him up, set him up, and it was the other fella. So I kidnapped this fella because the girl that informed them, they threatened the girl with a knife. And they said they'd cut her and the baby if she did it. I'm out of the bleeding traps like a bleeding greyhound, isn't I? Really? And the police had been spoken to, they couldn't do nothing about it. And then these fellas come back to the offices and shaking the doors and that. So I sorted this out. I went down there and I took this fellow away, who was led to believe in the local community. He even accepts that the people who were putting him up for the job. So I battered him terribly. He spent a week in hospital. He only knew a phone number. And I've since seen the gentleman, by the way. I've done restorative justice and we talk and I see him. And I see him a couple of 2 weeks ago. He come to my show home site. You know, it's massive how things are turned around and now it's benefiting him and me. And
Wow.
seeing a fella what I did to him cold flesh and blood calmly instead of being fueled by adrenaline. I took him away and then I went to prison for that. But I didn't give evidence and I had a hung jury. The police got caught out lying again. Chief Inspector lying, changing statements. Police phoning up witnesses, asking them to meet him at the end of the road. Blah, 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 and showing them my picture and writing out statements and getting them to sign them. This all came out in trial. I got immediate bail. I was on remand. First time in prison, I was remanded in Reading. So I got bail and I went to trial about 14 months after. And the jury is, I'll never forget it, it was an Oxford Crown Court, it was during the summer, and it was the air conditioning in the court, it wasn't keeping us cool because it was that hot. And the ladies had gone out onto a Thursday night to a Friday, and when the jury was out, and they didn't come back with a decision. So the judge said, "I'm putting you in a hotel again tonight." But some of the ladies still had the same clothes on, some of them ended. They went out, within 20 minutes, half hour, they came back with a guilty verdict. They went out again. I've gone downstairs to confer with my barrister, and we've been asked to go back upstairs. The jury have come back with a no. And they said they've made the wrong decision. How about, I've never heard of that before. And the judge said, "I have to take your first answer." And I've said this quite a few times now. Since it's not a game show, Your Honour. And but he was very fair, and he said, "Look, you took the law into your own hands. Vigilante," he said that in his summing up. He said, "You can't have that in society." But you know all of what's going on with the police and such. And I was expecting to get quite a severe sentence. And I got four lots of 2 years to run concurrently. I served 6 months on remand. And he said, "I know there's going to be an immediate appeal. And I know there'll be a bail application." So I went downstairs to my bail, said, "No, don't apply for bail. I didn't give evidence. I did do it. I'm happy with the sentence." And I went off to prison.
Right.
So how old were you then?
21.
All right.
I went into a man's prison.
Still a
That's
youngster.
quite youngster,
Yeah.
yeah, youngster, but full of life. I didn't. I mean, the prison. I thought, God, and that's the mistake that these young kids make. They go in now thinking, oh, it's exciting. They've come off the street and there are loads of friends in there. Loads of kids have been dealing or robbing or what they're doing now. So they're going into a community now that's already waiting for them to warmly receive them until things go wrong. That's where it's different. When I went into prison, there's more camaraderie about, a lot more old school prisoners that had a way about them that these young kids don't have, and a different set of morals, and certainly a different set of rules in relation to crime and what is acceptable and is not acceptable in my time, taking people's trains off them and burning their feet in cells and such to get their family to send money to them. They would have been in serious trouble when I first went into prison. And they'd have been had seriously dealt with. And I don't think they'd have even been on the landings. They'd been on the protection wings. But now it's considered okay. So I went in when they're, like I said, it's an old prison, in old school ways. We had to slop out. You used to get diesel tea at the cell, big bucket, steel bucket with tea, chipping at your door. And you used to have to get like a bit of meat out of the kitchen. The lads would smuggle it out. They smuggled out a joint of beef once and put it to me in a cell. We were starving. But let me tell you can only eat so much beef.
Yeah.
Chewing chunks of beef, but you're hungry with orange squash, I might add. So it's character building. And then I used to look out the window to my mum because she had a canteen to the building site I helped, quite bizarrely. She got a contract there. And I used to be able to look out the window, and she used to go up on the steps in over the wall of the prison. She was in the site over directly outside of the prison wall and wave. And I was in there with my best mate Marcus. And I was Jim Wood at the time, so I was a task, I said, "I'll get up and wave to my mum, will you?" She didn't know it weren't me. All she knew there was that arm there. That arm waving, knew I was all right. Marcus go,
Oh,
"Bleed now, Kevin," and he get out of the way with my mum.
God.
Lot of I went in there for that kidnapping, and I got released from there. And then I ended up going back to prison when I was 27 for murder.
Different thing altogether, really.
Yeah, so I wanted to get away from England because I was getting involved. I was had some few incidents, violent incidents, where I had some fight with some doorman for whatever reasons. That ended up going up tits up for them, should I say. Because they was picking on me, thinking I was just an innocent soul, and it just backfired. I said, "Well, let's go outside and sort it out like men." So I've gone outside. Well, I've had a few straighteners with the doorman, but they kept jumping me. So I said, "I'll be back. I'll sort you lot out another time." And they did their own work. So, "You made a mistake. He will be back." But he stood there and fought you lot. You keep jumping him. He said, "All right, I'll have you now." Then I got battered. But that was me. Like, you've taken a liberty. I'm not having it. Come on then. Like the old school would do. And I thought, this isn't right. I'm not going back to prison. I am not in England to be going through madness like this. So I went to Tenerife. I was having difficulties all by me, of course. The mother of my children was she's a real classy lady, but I was caught up with lots of women going out partying, nice cars. It's so easy to fall into that trap. As a young man, when you're full of testosterone, respectively, lady, I say that, and you're not really mature because you're meeting women that you're parts of your body are going nuts for, and you're getting bloody hundreds of them in front of you. As a young man, where men weren't getting it, I was working in nightclubs I weren't even old enough to be in, where you had to be a member to get in, and you get turned away. And they said, Kevin, come and work the door. These people would think I was a manager. I'll come up and talk to you. It's good for resolving situations, but also I'd be straight in there if I had to. But problems came there with that. So my relationship started to fail, my fault entirely. And then I went to Tenerife to have a new start. Ended up bumping into some people out there. Kim, the mother of my children, came out. She said, come and have another go. I said, all right. And we're sitting in a restaurant and some people were talking about drugs in a nice restaurant on a golf club, golf dessert. So I complained to the manager. Heavy came over. Another fella came over. I'm complaining. One of them turned around and said, you want to calm down, mate? I said, it's got nothing to do with you. This is a great big meathead. Popeye-shaped arms, big bald head, just come out of prison. Security fella. So it's got nothing to do with you, mate. Stay out of it. He looked like that. So I'm having my word with the manager and this other fella. And he's telling me, he's going, listen, mate, he said, if you don't calm down, we're going to have to go outside. I've jumped up. I went, no problem. But the blooming, he stood up, went, crash, crash. Gone off. He's ended up without a tear up. He's ended up being carried out. Come back to England for convalescence. And they said, look, when I come back, he says, he's been carried out. He said, when I come back, I'm going to kill you. Well, this isn't what I came out here for either. But I'm going to go back to England. But the police turned up with guns, machine guns out there. They don't mess around.
Yeah.
Oh, Benny. So I came out of the country on an exit visa, my mate's name, in case he was waiting for me at the airport. Come back to England and get nicked for bloody murder some months after. So I'm sitting there, it can't be that bad. It ain't me. I've just come back into the country, whatever, it'd be all right. Sitting there, and I thought, next thing you know, I'm put on bloody remand. What's going on here? And I received some advice here. Look, you'll be all right. They can't find you guilty of saying you ain't done. I thought, well, I'm in the bloody special secure unit in a minute, so something isn't right. What is going on here? I'm sitting in here, high risk, not seeing my missus and my kids, going all madness, being stripped and thrown in concrete cells with nothing else but concrete. Done all sorts of madness. So I didn't see my children for nearly 7 months. And then get found guilty for murder. And then I look at the how I was corralled into that, not just by the police, but my lifestyle put me in a position where it's easy for me to be maneuvered into that part. And like I say, if there's something I could change in my life, it might have been who I mixed with and where I went. But that's it now. I'm lucky enough to be in the position I'm in. With the fantastic friends and people around me, and even people I don't know who now support me through the social network. I'm on about mental health groups that I'm very passionate about. And I've been talking to mental health groups now for a long time, and nobody even knew about that. I do, because it's something that I just enjoy talking to people. So it's very well.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm doing anything, but just talking. And then went to prison. Big campaign.
I know the police involved in part of that were also sanctioned. Well,
Spackman. Yeah. Yeah, Spackman. So he's now under a new name. And when Panorama did the programme, they weren't allowed to name him because he's changed his life. All right. All that time I did in prison. Thinking I was coming home on a number of occasions for a number of reasons and never did. And so I was looking at some comments yesterday in relation to the James English podcast and other comments and other platforms. And they said, I've read this book, I'm a professional. Why is this case still out in the public domain? It hasn't been overturned. We need some answers here because the book clearly sets it out. There's no black order being placed on my book. The facts are facts from documents that I've been disclosed or I've acquired through the criminal justice system. And yet I'm still sitting here a convicted murderer. Well, it's quite clearly I didn't do the bleeding murder. So, and people know the bleeding murder.
How long were you in there that time?
What for? I went to prison for the murder all the week ago.
No, for the murder, first of all.
I went away in 1995, January. I got arrested on the 10th of January, kept at Watford Police Station, and then I was released. And I was arrested again on the 26th of January and remanded into custody, 1995. I was released in 2015, January the 16th. I was out for a number of years and then got recalled for a common assault. And then I had a very difficult time with an age. I have to be careful. I can't talk about stuff now. So I had a difficult time with my probation officer when I got transferred, and it didn't sit well. We just couldn't get on, unfortunately. But whatever. But all my other probation officers before then, fantastic, done me the world of good, and really helped me. I have to say that because they did help me. But this one, it didn't go that well. So I got recalled for common assault whilst I'd been on bail for 6 months, running a business and employing people. No interference with the victim. Okay. I threw that victim. It was a previous girlfriend of mine who was as drunk as you could imagine, not justifying it, but these are the events. He took my car keys, my wallet, and my phone and stuck them in her freezer while she's drinking all night. I'm 44 miles away from my home. I'm having this is in Ascot. I lived in Westerham, which is in Kent. So I finally found my keys at 6:30 or 6 o'clock in the next morning. But through that time, my pretty girlfriend, she running up and down my car. It was a new car, a new Range Rover, nice new model. I'd always wanted one, and I'd got one, and it's all the extras. And she was running up and down it, drunk with a key, scratching it while I'm sitting in the car, kicking it and punching it. She caused £2,000 worth of damage. And by the way, ladies, all I'm telling you now, I've got on CCTV footage. Okay, I've got it. And on four occasions, I've put my arms around her, put her indoors, got back in the car. And then, she had some problems, and bless her. She'd had a bit of a hard life in terms of her mother had passed away. She was ill. Her mother passed away some years later, but she was ill, her mum, Ava. So there's the difficulties there. I'm not justifying what happened, but drink was a saviour, and she turned on it because of the pain, I believe, that she was suffering. So on the fifth occasion, when I finally managed to get in my car and get it started and get away, bear in mind she'd ripped the bloody number plate off the back as well, she's come out of her door again with nothing but a shirt on, no undergarments, walking around in Ascot. So I've reversed back in, I've gone up to her, and as I've gone up to her, she's turned to spit at me. I've grabbed her hair on her shoulder and I threw her. And I went to prison for 14 and a half months for that. Okay.
So, did she have any punishment, if you like, for the damage she'd been doing, or was it no?
Nope. And it's all on camera, clear as day, everything. Now, my solicitor said, she should be arrested for withholding you, preventing you from leaving, criminal damage to your car, and you wouldn't have been there and phoned her if you'd had your keys in your car, your wallet and such in the first place, and she hadn't taken them from you and put them in her freezer. So I was trying to remove myself from the situation because it was drink fueled. I thought, I can't be here. I was sober. But as a result of that, all through the bleeding night, the verbal abuse and whatever else and that, I, because of my record, I went to prison for that, a non-custodial offence. So that's quite bad for me. And I take that quite hard, that what happened to me there. And I got released, and I was out 2 months to another new probation officer. I had two probation officers in a matter of months, and they recalled me. And it turned out that there was some reports to be made that weren't correct, and they was proven to be incorrect. And I was released immediately by the Secretary of State. And my cell door was open on a Friday night, and the staff were there. I've got away with the staff, all right, and he's gone, Kevin, get your kit. They want you out of here immediately. I went, give us 5 minutes. I said, I've got a few things to do. I didn't want to look like I was rushing out that door. So I grabbed all the stuff. I thought, well, who needs what? He needs some trainers down there. This kid needs something down there. Don't know their names after them, the young kids and that. But I'll give all my stuff to my neighbour, Jason Holland. I said, like, dish that out, right? Do who it's written down on the thing and whatever else you want to do with it. And I got let out, and then I've been out since. So onwards and upwards. But that's quite a reduced
Version, yeah.
Condensed version, I can imagine.
I know we're going to talk to Simone another time because she was very instrumental in that campaign, wasn't she? But we're.
Yes, yeah, very.
But since you said earlier when we were talking, it was because of your record, because of your lifestyle, you were drawn into these things. And because of your record, you ended up with a custodial sentence that was a non-custodial sentence, should have been non-custodial. And now you're out. And how's that changed you? What has changed as a result now that you're out?
Well, being recalled, the times I had, my life changed in that monetary. I lost my beautiful home. I had a beautiful cottage in a hamlet of woods listed. I walked out into a nature park. It's just beautiful. Financially, you had to sell everything to keep the business going. That is quite a knock because I've come home from prison with nothing and got something, achieved something, and then lost it.
Taken away, yeah.
That I've had to do in a minimal amount of years where people have had 40 years to get to that stage. I did it in two. So I've had to come home again now and start another company. And the difficulties I'm having there with that. So although I've been in talks with the Master Federation of Builders for the award of the year, I've had this product designed and imported into the country. It's their homes that I've had designed. And what I designed was exceptional. However, when it's delivered in this country, they've cut corners in that some of the materials they've used have been spares, not what I ordered. So I should have had three sliding doors. I've got one.
Yeah.
Cutting costs, using silver screws instead of black because they're cheaper. And they don't, if you're using a silver screw in a black frame, it sticks out. But they do that in England, okay? But I said, I don't want that. I want black with black. I want silver with silver. All right? I don't want the eye to pick up on a silver screw. Although you go to some beautiful, all window fitters do that now. A little bit extra, and that was a little bit extra in my homes I wanted people to pick up on. So I've had some problems there, but I've got a home designed and built. I've put it into a meadow in Chalfont St Giles, a show home site, and I've launched my homes. Although, what of the earthquake and that such, I'm still finishing them.
Yeah.
Like the finishing details. That's where I am now after the recalls, but that's taken me 14 months from the game.
How long have you been out, sort of finally?
I've been out now this time 14 months.
That's 14 months. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And in that time, I've been going back and forward to Turkey and then designed this house, flown out there again to see the start of the build and such and go, keep going through stuff. And then they were delivered into England. And we're going to be launching soon. But my product has been copied by other Turkish companies, which I don't care. Turks do that. That's great. It doesn't matter to me. The fact is that my product has been recognised as an excellent product, and now as such, a company's approached me to possibly JV with them and sell my product and manufacture my product for me.
Yeah.
And so things are promising.
You've got such an attention to detail that you're not letting them get away with any minor faults in that. Because one of the reasons with Turkey is that people were getting away with substandard products, but your attention to detail is making that perfect.
Spot on. But it's the problem I've got to get to that stage at the moment is because I'm now rectifying what they should have done in the factory.
Yeah.
Silly things like they use pelmet, kitchen pelmet. They put on the floor for skirting. And all right, there's an argument for that because the visas were turned down from the fitters coming over from Turkey to install the units. And we've been waiting now 3 months for the answer to this, and we've paid an extra several thousands of pounds to reapply again for the visas. They sent over two steel workers to erect the steel work of the building, and then they turned the hand to the carpentry. When I've looked at it, I thought, "Oh my God, what have you done?" They've now been sent back to Turkey. My fitters in England that were waiting to fit it in the first instance are now stepping in. But the reason being, because Turkey supplied my building, they want their fitters to come over here to do it. They didn't envisage it. The carpenter's visa would be declined. And then, of course, the workers have just picked it up and thought, oh, we're fit it because it's acceptable over in Turkey. We just knock a few pound off. Well, no, we don't in England. It has to be, the customer has to see what they're getting and be happy with it from the start.
Yeah.
Not substandard product, and then say, "Oh, we'll make it good later, or knock a few quid off."
No.
And that's how some of the so. But there's an excellent product, and it's been recognised by, like I say, other companies now. So that's where I'm at the moment. Living hand to mouth, though, ladies. I mean, look, the saying "beg, borrowed, stolen." I haven't stolen anything, but I haven't begged. But I've been loaned. I've been fed. I'm having fuel put in my car. Anything I need, if a car goes wrong, or I've had a few problems with a few cars lately, come to several thousands of pounds. I've been picked up by my friends and associates, no problem. Because I've got hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of stock sitting there.
Yeah.
But I'd rather be free than sitting in prison with lots of other problems. And people could say, "Well, look, Kevin, sell your watch. It's £42,000 there." But why? I don't need large amounts of money at the moment. If I've got to go away, stay away. Someone will give me that money, and they will keep an account of it. And when I sell something, they will get their money back. And I'm very frank and honest. I don't have to blow no trumpets to make me out to be anything different, because I ain't different to anybody.
Yeah.
Just because I've got £500,000 worth of stock there, okay, that owes me a lot of money, which I've sold everything again and borrowed, like I say. But when I sell them, I'll be in a position where I can move forward again and have a life. You have to sacrifice and take these sacrifices and these hard blows in life to appreciate life. And I appreciate life like you'd never believe, because I've had 20 odd years of it taken from me. So when it's been taken from me once already, and then I come out and I have all this to deal with again, it amplifies how you feel. But I'm in a good position. I'm talking to you ladies, so that's not bad. I could have been in prison writing you a letter.
Yeah. It's that positive outlook that's really kept you going, and the fact, you are up for the next challenge the whole time is quite amazing. I mean, you've talked a little bit about the fact that you've got Simone and the relationship you've got with your mum, some of your other family you said you haven't got quite as a good relationship. How much has that big network of family and friends really helped you?
I could, well, massively. How would I have got through what I did if it weren't for the love and affection that I received from friends and families and my partner? She's pulling faces here now, clear off. I couldn't have got through that. I don't think I'd have got through it as I am now. I'm a very fortunate person, because believe me, I've had some pain, as lots of people have. We've all got our own story. So you need that support in life, and people shouldn't be frightened to turn around and say that. And they shouldn't be frightened to turn around and ask someone.
Yeah,
They
that's
shouldn't be
true.
frightened to turn around and say, "My pal's feeding me, my sister's doing my washing," or "my partner is, so to speak." My sister lives very close to where I am, so it's traffic, it's a lot easier anyway, so. That is all due to people who have got kind hearts and they care for you. Even down to getting people on my show home site working for a fraction of the money sometimes. Instead of two of them charging me £1,250 for the day, they've charged me half price. Pass now, pass rest later. Well, forget it, Kevin. I've had pals of mine working on that site for me for months. It reduced rates, but it cost a lot of money still. Giving their time up for nothing sometimes. Lots of people. I'm all about one or two people coming out of the woodwork for you ain't seen for ages. "Kevin, I've got this for you. I'll be able to do that. I've heard you're doing this." Phoning me up, sending me messages out of the blue. I ain't spoken to for years. It's lovely. So I say this to people: don't tread on people's toes, okay? But just stamp on yours. Treat people how you want to be treated, with love and affection and respect. And listen to people, what they say to you sometimes. Because people sometimes are not really saying what they're feeling.
Yeah.
But what they might be saying to you is something different. And then that could help you and help them. But I have more time for each other. My 5-year-old son says to me a few months ago, he said, he's quite shocked, in terms of pleasantly shocked. He says, "Daddy, people don't talk as much anymore, do they?"
5-year-old.
I thought, No, they don't. He said, I like talking. I thought, yes. I said, so does Daddy. And we laughed. And that came from a 5-year-old
Wow.
boy.
So are you wary now of not getting caught up in difficult situations or?
Yeah. Oh, why would I want to go to, say, a football match if that football match, so West Ham, had had a massive punch up with Millwall in the last game? There's going to be retribution from some people. Well, that means I will avoid that football match. I'll go and see something else. I won't go to a piece of demonstration climate change because I might be ending up at the front of that demonstration being pushed into a police officer who's going to arrest me. But I can't go back because there's thousands of people behind me pushing us forward. Maybe I shouldn't have been at the front, but I've come into the front of the march. Well, coming from a side street, and they're coming along here, let's join it. And you ended up at the front.
Yeah.
Or a little bit from the front, but you ended up getting pushed to the front. Not because you want to be seen as an aggressor. You think, well, bloody hell, I've ended up in this. So I wouldn't go to one of those demonstrations. And I would like to go to a climate change demonstration, peaceful one, and just show support. But you can't because you can't guarantee there won't be any violence there or problematic situations. I don't stop going out. I mean, I go out quite a lot in terms of guest speakers, and I get invited to country clubs where I'm sitting on tables and that, and they're advertised. I do go out in that sense, but I try to be careful where I go for getting in trouble.
Yeah.
I can trust myself to behave, but you can't trust other people. But because I've got a violent history with the conviction, unfortunately, and my prison time in prison was extremely violent. But the thing is, when I say that, I have to say that with ladies, I was in the jungle. And then the jungle is the survival of the fittest and the strongest. But with that comes, you get the meanest and the humblest, and you get the best. You get the best of the best and the worst of the worst. And I used that I was told to say that in a series I've just done for teenagers and cons, interviewing them to try and put them off going into prison. And that's what we said. I've done time with the best of the best, the worst of the worst. Well, how true is that? But with that comes, if you're the best of the best and you've got a big heart and you're a nice fella and you come out and you chat to everybody, all right, well, everybody, but somewhat, if you've got a bit of a, you wouldn't, but I'll chat to anyone, me, all right, comes problems. Whether it's someone who's a deep sexual deviant, laying on people in bed in the morning when they're in bed naked, first thing when the door's open, he's a big predator. I'm going to have a couple of words with that person. Or an old man had his bacon nicked in his ice cream. Well, I mentioned his name. He's known. He's an old man. His son was a known football player. He came into prison. And this Johnny Bravo type man took his ice cream and his bacon. Real old school Londoner. Old, getting on. He come and told me. I said, well, can't do that. And he said, yeah, but Kevin asked for it back and he told me to F off. I went, I'll have a word with him. Well, that having a word with him, before you know it, the old wing knows that I'm going to have a word with this Johnny Bravo. I've gone into a laundrette to do my laundry. The door's open. Johnny Bravo's walked in there, the back of the thing, standing there with a cup in his hand. He weren't coming in to make me a cup of tea because it was empty. He went off. Threw that, I broke my hand. I had a big split in the head where he kicked me with a cup. Needed stitches, big gash. But you can't go and report it because you've been involved in an incident then. So through that incident now, I've got a massive gash in my head. Needed stitches. We plugged it with cotton wool. Kept plugging and keeping my hands on it to stop it bleeding. And then eventually it just clotted up and stopped and scabbed over. But you can't wear hats in prison on the land. They want you to take hats off. And if you go in and be in search, you've got to take your hat off. I was gym warden at the time. Luckily, I got away with it because your gym warden you straight through when the lads are coming through to be searched. You get rubbed down, of course, but not like because you're trusted. And through that, like I say, broken hand, smashed head. The fella that I had it with, he ended up looking like John Merrick. So he had his injuries as well. And I'll never forget, he did look like John Merrick and all. He couldn't talk or anything. He was like, all like this. And he come up to me the next day, he said, Kevin, is that it? I said, no, hey. I said, we're going to have another go down the gym. I said, you're not getting away with this. And then the lad's saying to me, Kevin, look at him. He can't talk. His eyes are closed. He's not anyway, right? There's only a fight, all right? But he had a weapon. governor come up to me that day. It's all right, Kevin. It's all right, Mick. And because I used to call me Kevin, the governor's. And he said, "Is that it now? Done?" I went, "Yeah, that's it now. It's all done. No problem." Off he walked. So there's the unwritten law in the prison where you've got to look after each other because the staff can't.
Yeah.
And you've got to look after yourself because the staff can't take care of you. And unfortunately, you'll get punished for that. So the Charlie Bronson situation, Charlie is a product of the system. And there's thousands of other people like Charlie at the moment in the system because they've gone in with a 1 or 2 year IP system and they're now doing 16 years or 11 years. They've lost hope. They're broken. They're in the blocks. They're taking drugs. They're just broken. They're going around. That's because of our criminal justice system is making mistakes. People keep saying about Charlie should he be released. Well, should we keep him in prison then? Because we failed in our duty to rehabilitate someone and release them. So that means because we failed, we're going to continue punishing him. And thousands of other people. There'll be no good to the communities when they get released. When they get released. And they'll be back in. That's what the system's doing at the moment. So gone off track a little bit there, ladies. Sorry about
Well,
that.
it's interesting to hear another point of view, though. I mean, we watch the programs, there's always various programs on the telly, isn't there, involving prisons and violence and all the rest of it. But to hear from the other side is quite interesting.
Julie, I'm lucky enough to have prison officers as friends. Left the job. Excellent people, excellent men. Some prisoners wouldn't like to hear me say that, but they know I would talk to someone on the landing where someone else wouldn't. And I say, "Why? Do you know the fella? Just because he's a bit odd or quiet, do you know him?" "No." "Well, I actually speak to him. He's all right. He keeps pigeons, and I used to keep pigeons. So we've got a common interest there. He's a quiet man, but he was an oddball." In terms of what people used to say, but he weren't an oddball, he was just a quiet man who didn't really talk to people.
Yeah.
I said, "All right, mate, you all right?" They go, "Yeah, all right." And then we're off in a conversation. But that program of Charlie Bronson portrayed me to be an aggressive man. I knew some of the questions were coming at me directed to be able to help Charlie. So when I said, "Yes, I'm in society," before and after that, such filming and that, it was, look, I can be violent if I have to be to defend myself. I won't go out and be violent because I want to be violent on someone, but I've boxed all my life, so of course I can handle myself. But because I'm a convicted murderer, me handling myself means I'm a danger. Now, hold on a minute. Take the conviction off of me, and I've defended myself or my family or whatever's gone on where I am, and I'm considered a nice fella. See the difference? It's wrong. Now, that documentary portrayed me to be aggressive in that it didn't show what happened before. I said, "Can you ask them to be quiet?" They'd already been asked once. It'd already been filmed. They knew we were filming. They were shouting and behaving outside. I'd been asked to be quiet once again. And I was like, "What is wrong with these people?" So that wasn't shown. It was work when I was talking to, not my children. They didn't show me talking about the criminal justice system and what could benefit it and such like that and what works and what I don't think does work. A whole different side to me. They showed that dog. Made it look like it was mine. They were kennels for a daycare centre. They was asked not to film the dog. So I wasn't quite happy how I was portrayed, because you've seen how I am. I'm no different, ladies, to how I am there with you. I'm out, I go to that door. That's the truth.
Yeah, I haven't seen the program actually, so
It's not clever.
no.
But if it means that people can look at me and say, "Well, that man's in society, he's considered violent and dangerous, then why can't Charlie?" At one point, I thought I'd get recalled for doing that, because the way it's portrayed and edited. And that was worrying. I'm getting recalled because it's been edited wrong. Yeah.
It is difficult, as you say, once you've got that record to get past it. Like, even this morning, we had to delay this slightly because you'd had an unexpected call with your probation office. You're never going to get away from that, are you?
Yeah, it wasn't unexpected. It was arranged. I went to have a call yesterday, and it came this morning at, it was unexpected in the sense it came as a late arrangement. Yesterday, the late yesterday. But I welcome the call in that I get on exceptionally well with my probation officer, in that I can talk to him. In I can say to him, a certain topic came up this morning in relation to the media attention that I'm doing. and something that I might have to have amended on my license as a result. But I mentioned, I raised something. I said, I wouldn't mind an amendment on my license, a suggestion. I said, to safeguard me from any media doing stuff that they shouldn't have done. I said, so I'd actually like a license condition on there that I can use when I'm doing my filming. I'd say, well, you need to be aware of that. But if you're not aware of that, I can't do it. And he goes, Kevin, I never thought of it like that. He said, and you've brought it forward and requested that. He says, that's good. So I'm able to communicate with him in senses that not often we would have a prisoner say, can you put a license condition on me? They don't want any conditions on them. But if anyone who's watching this as a prisoner, sometimes you need to look at these conditions and think, well, have it put on me. And it's on there, so you're mindful of it, it's on there, and you will use that to benefit you and stop you getting in trouble. And I have to think about that now because while I'm doing so much filming, I've already done a trailer and I've really enjoyed it. But I don't want to lose that side of it because in those that filming, there's some real decent discussions coming out about homeless, what could be done, criminal justice system, people in general. And you're getting to see a side of people on telly, not prisoners so much, but the celebrities or whatever their profession is. I've been told I've got to cut it out short, so I should have been on site. Sorry.
I will stop there. It is fascinating talking to you. Can I just ask, what advice would you give to youngsters now or anybody who's been in your position? That's a big area, isn't it?
So, films portray gangsters as our heroes, okay? But it isn't like that anymore. It's the sadness and the destruction and the devastation that is caused once you go into prison from what will be inflicted upon you through punishment and what will be inflicted upon you from your own fellow interns. Criminals ain't heroes, okay? They can be seen as some of the jobs they do is quite heroic, not heroic, should I say, but clever, okay? And oh, he's one of the lads, but that's no way to go forward in life. I've gone and got a few quid all my life and done really well, and I've been free, and I've had children, luckily. The life behind them doors is no life, so think carefully. You can make a right turn or you can make the wrong turn. Make sure you keep making the right turn, because every wrong turn will have a wrong bleeding action coming your way. A right turn will have a positive action coming your way. So think about where you are now and where you really want to be going forward in the future. And if I'd have had my time again, I'd have chosen maybe to not do some of the things or mix with some of the people I did and be kind to people. Be kind and generous in terms of your listening to them or conversation or carrying a bag with someone or doing something. And you get a lot more reward from that than you can. And that's about it, really. Hope it helps.
There's lots more that we could ask you and talk about, but it's been fascinating. Yeah.
I'd love to come on again, ladies.
Well, we might even follow that up.
Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed you listening to me, as you've done a lot of that. And I wasn't doing much listening to you, was I? But I understand how. But thank you once again. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. And I hope all goes well for your future projects.
Yeah, well, there's a lot coming out. You see it on the social platforms, different programs coming out, and that. Keep your eyes peeled.
We'll wait to see what comes next. Good luck and keep going in the direction you're going.
Well, a very different Kevin from that we've seen portrayed in the media. So, huge thank you to Kevin for talking to us. And also to Simone, his partner, who helped organise this interview and, in fact, has agreed to talk to us herself in a couple of weeks' time. It is, as Kevin says, really important that you have a good support network. In fact, nearly all our guests have said they couldn't have turned their lives around and be where they are today without that support network. So it'll be fascinating to talk to Simone in a couple of weeks' time. And also, thank you to you, our listeners. Do keep giving us your feedback. Until next time.